this is?
It's a scrape of your fingers on the back.
No. It's a turkey call. The reason I brought the turkey call was the following. I wanted to illustrate, what was actually mentioned before, that this is the machaber. Kol mishu baki botam mininu shemotam, whoever knows the names of these words and knows the verse, hareza ofo kol of she'enu mehem. The birds that are forbidden, of course. You can eat anything else. They don't sarich benita. Va'of ta'or nechav v'masoret. A kosher bird is only eaten with a masoret. Rushi adav pashut v'otu makom. And it's obvious that there has to be a clear thing in that place. She's a'ofor v'neman sayad l'agid. And a hunter, we said this already, is relied upon to say, hof zehi tiri rabbi ha'sayad. This is the Shulchan Aruch. This is not the Gemara that I already quoted. And the Shach says it very clearly. Hof zehi tiri rabbi ha'sayad. You can't even say, again, the point here is, we're talking here very much about halakha l'maaseh. Our story and our interest in birds goes back to a sefer. You have a sefer here? An exceedingly rare sefer. In all of Israel today, there's no longer one of them. There was one. In Rome, there's maybe two or three. There's one or two in America, and there's one in France that I know of. This sefer, printed in Livorno in 1832 by an Italian, Bode Shofe, and he wrote the sefer in Italian and in Hebrew on Hilchot Nikur. What's exceptional about this sefer is that he drew pictures of the 30 birds. We have here the actual pictures of the birds. He printed them as posters, and he has the Latin names of the 30 birds that he has a masoret on. Now, if you think about it for a minute, what birds do we eat in America in the last 50 years? Duck, chicken, turkey,
geese,
and pigeon. Geese, maybe. Pigeon, you ate pigeon?
Pigeon, yeah.
Has anyone here eaten pigeon? Yes. Where did you eat pigeon?
Squab.
I can't. During the war in America.
No.
In Europe?
Europe.
Okay, in Europe, not home.
What else they call squab? Is that actually a...
Squab is a small chicken, I think, correct?
Is it? Yeah.
Quail? Quail is kosher, but has anyone eaten quail in America?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Yes. our interest started, Ari and I, just a very interesting thing. This is the Sefer Kafa Chaim, written by Rav Yaakov Sofer. It's a Sephardi Sefer from Iraq, I believe. He moved to Yerushalayim. In fact, here's a picture of him. Very interesting, huge Talmud Chacham. He understood this issue, and you see what he writes here. Va'of ha'nikra mirlo, ayin masha katu here, she'amru ki be'ir Livorno, this sefer that I just quoted, ochlim oto, va'ani re'iti, Masoret shel ir Livorno. What does that mean? A rabbi in Iraq? Ani re'iti Masoret Livorno?
Turkey.
In Turkey? He wasn't in Turkey.
He was
in Turkey?
Yeah.
Okay, excuse me.
No.
He was in Iraq, I'm sorry. Baghdad or Iraq?
Baghdad.
He moved to Yerushalayim. It doesn't really matter, but what you see here is the issue is that Ani re'iti Masoret Livorno. In other words, what? I saw the pictures of Masoret Livorno. I saw these pictures in Sefer Kafa Chaim. We know that there are lots of different birds that were eaten. This is from 1876 in London, from the Jewish Chronicle, listing pheasants and guinea hens and so on. What's happened? How come we today don't eat these birds? Why was the Masorah lost? There are numerous reasons. One of the reasons, the main reason, I think, is kibbutz goliot, the fact that they're no longer little shoftim in small places. All shoftim moved to large Jewish centers. Very rare today to find a shoftim that lives in a small town, and a Jewish farmer goes into the shuk and finds an unusual bird and brings it to the shofet. And the shofet says, my grandfather used to shep this bird. I remember as a little boy seeing it. Doesn't happen today. Also, you have commercial slaughter today. What does commercial slaughter mean? You slaughter what's most financially feasible for the company. What's financially feasible? Chickens, turkeys, ducks, maybe we said geese. It's not financially feasible to grow pigeons. They're difficult. Sparrows are not easy to grow. Guinea hens are not so easy to grow. They make a lot of noise and a pain in the neck, and their food isn't all that, their meat isn't all that tasty. Yet, as recently as here we see 100 years ago, they were eating this. Our interest was piqued by the birds of pheasants. We were asked to chef the pheasant. Ari and I learned how to chef when we were 18. We were in yeshiva in Israel, and somebody asked us to chef the pheasant. I didn't know what a pheasant was. And we went and we looked into it, and we found an article somebody had written on it, and we saw that Rav Moshe actually ossered the pheasant. What's interesting is that picture of that pheasant was from the Sefer Zivkei HaKohen. And you can see it was bird number one, Fagiano Reale. Until today, that's the name of the bird in Latin. And in Italy, they had a very clear Masorah to chef the bird. Rav Moshe was asked the question whether the pheasant was kosher. He asked Rabbi Karlbach, the father of Shlomo Karlbach, from Berlin, I believe, whether or not he knew of anybody that had a Masorah on pheasant, and Karlbach said no, he didn't know. So therefore, Moshe said no, we don't eat pheasant. And Baklav, you can't rely upon the name of the bird, and that's exactly the issue in the story, because maybe what they called a pheasant in the Gemara wasn't the pheasant of today. The Gemara is very clear. Pheasant was kosher. It's mentioned many times in the Gemara. Olel Shulchan Malachim is language of the Gemara. It's a very fine bird that fit for the table of a king. On our recent trip to Italy for this, we took one day or half a day, and my wife and I were traveling. We went to see the museum or the palace of the Sultan. And in the palace of the Sultan, we found a sterling silver pheasant for the tabletop. So you understand, when the Gemara now is talking about Olel Shulchan Malachim, it really sort of illustrates it very clearly, Olel Shulchan Malachim. And here we see the Jewish community of Firenze, Florence?
Yes,
Florence. And you can see over here, Fagiano. Fagiano is pheasant. In the 1920s, there was a shofet in London. Subsequently, Rabbi Dr. Levinger from now Eretz Israel, formerly of Basel, told us that he actually went and checked into this shofet to see if it was reliable. And sure enough, when he went to London and he spoke to people there, there were people that remembered the Shofet Burshtin, and he has a list of various birds that he had a Masoret on, and he has a picture here on the bottom of the pheasant. Well, Ari and I were in the Beis Medrash, and we had decided that we would not check the pheasant, because after all, Rav Moshe said no, and that was how it ended for us. And a Temani walked by, a Yemenite, and he said, "You heard us say the word Passion." And he said, "You know, Rav Kappa, who was the head of the Yemenite Jewish community, a huge Talmud Chacham, written many Svarim, translated many Svarim, on the Beit Din Hagadol of Yerushalayim, Rav Kappa had that Shabbat given a shir and mentioned, when you remember Shechting pheasant in Yemen." We got in touch with Rav Kappa. Now understand, we were two 18-year-old schnooks in yeshiva. Now, even today, thinking about it, it's a crazy thing. You know, we said we would like to chef the pheasant. So, Ari and I went north, buses. It was the week before the conversion to Lebanon. I remember coming back from the north, and there was an army train from Haifa up to Lebanon. We simply didn't understand. We were so naive and so silly. We simply didn't understand that there was a war about to start. Literally, we didn't understand that a war. We just saw trucks from Haifa going north. We brought the bird back down, and here in front of Rav Kappach, we shefted the pheasant. Rav Kappach wrote us the following letter. He came before me, he gave me snicha. I'm a dentist, I'm not a rabbi. Rabbi Yosef, and Anshel, and Ari Zivotofsky, they brought before me the following bird. The bird is known in its tahor. It's known as a pheasant in Hebrew and Arabic, tadarj. In Yemen, it was called darj. Hayadua shul tahor, v'yesh bo kol simanei tara. All of the signs, Yeshua Masorah, Shu'ok Tahar, Vareinu Rabbanim Gedolim, Sheshachu at the Ochanah. We saw great rabbis that shefted this bird without any hesitation, and therefore they slaughtered this bird for me, and I come and sign in front of you, and this is the Eidus of Rav Kappa. Well, Ari and I, before the age of internet, before the age of email, we wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Again, it's mind-boggling to me that we did such a thing. And we said we would like Rav Moshe Feinstein to please reevaluate his position on the pheasant. And we got a letter back from his secretary then. And the secretary says to us, this is the letter from 1984, 82, that we're intellectually convinced that the Sezon is indeed a kosher bird. However, you seem to misunderstand what Rav Moshe Feinstein requested. You need both a visual and an oral Masorah that's reliable, and therefore we can't reevaluate our position. Now, this was not Rav Moshe Feinstein, this was his secretary. We sent a letter back to him saying, we're very sorry, you seem to misunderstand us. We brought the bird in front of Rav Kappa, and he shechted the bird and told us, and so on. By this time, unfortunately, Rav Moshe was very ill, and we never received another answer. Subsequently, we've gone, and basically, this is what spurred us on. We realized that these Masorahs were being lost, and we were maybe a decade too late, but the old Shoftim from Yemen, from Morocco, from Italy, from Germany, were either very, very old men or no longer alive. Nonetheless, we started traveling around trying to track down these old Shoftim, to try and capture these last Masorahs before they disappear. Here, shuffling a bird. Obviously, we were a little bit younger in those days. This was in Connecticut, where we were shefting a pheasant. The Shulchan Aruch says, regarding, can you rely upon the Masorah of one location if you don't have such a Masorah? I'm from Germany, and the person from Belgium comes to me and says, you know, we shef such and such a group. So the Chabar already says, "Im Sharma Kamot She'en Leh Masoret." Other places that don't have such a Masoret, Yecholim Leflo Asmach Machom She'yesh Leh Masoret. Can a place that doesn't have rely upon a place that does have? Yesh Misha Oseh, V'yesh Misha Matir, V'yesh Lechulsh V'Divrei Oseh. Apparently, according to the Machaber, one cannot rely upon the Masoret of another place. One cannot rely upon the Masoret of another place. However, the Shach disagrees. The Shach says, "Who is the Oseh?" The Oser here is the Rosh. The Rashba disagrees. The Rashba says, what is the Mechaber saying? What is the Oser being saying? He's saying, when can you not rely, or when can a community not rely upon a community that has a Masoret? That's when the community that is trying to get the Masoret has a negative Masoret. Here in Belgium, we do not eat pheasants. In Germany, they may. In Belgium, we have a tradition not to eat a pheasant. However, if in Belgium there's Chosar Yediyah, we don't have any Masoret. We don't know about the pheasant. Of course, we're allowed to rely upon the Masoret of Germany and eat the pheasant in Belgium. That's the way the Shach postulates. As part of our work here, we've met many Gedolim. It's been a real honor for us to do this. And here one day, Ari and I decided to take Rav Schechter on what we call a halachic adventure. It was a little surprising to him. I picked him up in Yerushalayim. I drove him out to Efrat in the West Bank, where I had an Arab waiting for me with birds. And I thought the Arab would meet me in Efrat. The Arab said, no, come to the checkpoint. So in the middle of the night, it was about 10, 9 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock, it was dark out already, with Mrs. Schechter in the car. We drove past the checkpoint to the Arab side, whereupon he gave us a whole slew of birds, including a peacock, which we'll see in a second. And Mrs. Schechter wasn't so excited to have the peacock in the car. Nonetheless, here we're meeting with one of the Gedolei Kashrut in Eretz Yisrael, and that's Rav Machpud. And we have here a stuffed pheasant. This was not a bird that we actually shefted. Here we shefted a pheasant. There's Rabbi Ten, who shefted a pheasant with Rav Machpud, who I also saw it on the Kashrut of the bird. Again, after our issue here, we wrote an article. We have here the Halakha Bura, who said the following. Recently, there were some ornithologists.
All right,
the article's in, what page is it on?
81.
This is the Midrash Halakha Bura, isn't it?
No, our
article. Oh, okay, I don't care about the article now, but recently there were some ornithologists, that's Ari and I, we became ornithologists, who were able to locate a Yemenite Shochet. Not a Yemenite Shochet, let's just understand, we're talking about Rabban Shel HaTemanim on the Chaver Beit Din HaGadol Shel Yerushalayim, not exactly just a Yemenite Shochet, who recognized and recalled shechting the pheasant over 50 years ago in Yemen. I don't know where that came from, not necessarily. It's noteworthy to know, however, and this is true, that Rav Moshe ends off his tshuva by saying that even if a Masorah is indeed found, the Rishonim imply that it's an admirable practice for communities not to accept new birds based upon traditions of other people. And then he quotes the source. There are a number of issues, and I'm very, very quickly, very, very quickly regarding the issue of Rav Moshe's tshuva. Ramosha does indeed say that at the end, and the reason that Ramosha quotes those Rishonim is based upon the fact that since many birds are similar to each other, Ramosha quotes these Rishonim and says that since birds are similar, one might come to make a mistake and therefore be confused. I recently had this discussion with Rabbi Tanu, who was in Israel, because as I reread this tshuva of Ramosha, you can see Ramosha says here, I'm not going to find it now, but I think it's in the source book, that we're foshesh that people might be confused and see the way this bird looks and confuse it with other birds. Very interesting, because there is no other bird that looks like the pheasant. So the question then is, how does Rav Moshe say that? And what I asked Rabbi Tendler this question, I asked Mrs. Tendler this question as well, who's Rav Moshe's daughter, and he said to me, many times Rav Moshe relied upon whatever experts came to him. He had questions, and the experts told him, and he said whatever he said based upon that. So this is a question that certainly I'm not opposed to. I'm just bringing the issues before us here today. The work that Arian, yes?
You're going to mention turkey.
We'll get to turkey, and if I don't, you'll come back to me. Our work has brought us to some unusual things doing these halachic sudas. The first halachic suda started because of the pheasant, because I showed Rabbi Tendler the information he had, and he was very upset when he saw that the secretary of Rav Moshe didn't accept the edut, certainly didn't put it in front of Rav Moshe, and he said, based upon what you show me, I'll eat the pheasant. And based upon that, we ended up deciding to make this dinner of Masoret, where we passed on the Masoret publicly, and sort of what we're going to be doing this evening, cast of unusual characters. This fellow here had never left, according to his own testimony, Meishar. Once he said he went to Hebron. So we were literally... I don't remember. I may switch the animals, but there was either a cow or a donkey. I don't remember which one it was. And he pointed to the donkey and he said, "Is that a cow?" Or he pointed to the cow and he said, "Is that a donkey?" He wasn't sure. It was an unusual sort of character. Here we were going to get our geese. I will mention, Ari has been shepherding me the entire trip here. I must mention swan. The swan features prominently on the advertisement. While we, per se, ourselves, don't have an eduk on swan, Rabbi Levinger, in his book, Mazon Kasher Min HaChai, which is sort of a handbook on this issue of Masorah, Rabbi Levinger is also a veterinarian, does have an eduk on swan, and Bezrat Hashem, one day, who knows. Also, the issue that I think, maybe Rabbi Ganak mentioned, the issue that we talked about, the fact, I think, believe it's the Machaber quoting, Gemara talks about the fact that if you have a bird and you're not sure whether it's kosher, the language is ma'midim oto al chevel. You put him on a string, and you see how he puts his fingers. Birds that are dores, that are attacking birds, at least this is what I understood from the Gemara, split their fingers, two in front and two in the back. And indeed, if you can envision some sort of an eagle swooping down for a fish or something, and that's how they do it like that. At least that's what I thought. I don't know how many of you have your own personal taxidermist, but as I went to my taxidermist one day and I was discussing it with him, he says, "Oh, that's only Dorseyon, the birds that attack during the day, but the birds that attack during the night, they don't split their fingers like this." I may be switching it day and night, but in other words, again, here's an example where you need somebody who's an expert. Not all Dorseyon actually split them. So what does that mean? You're not sure if a bird's kosher, and you see that you put it on a chevel, and you see that its fingers go like a... Does that mean all of a sudden it's kosher? Of course not. Recently there was an issue with certain chickens, I believe, where they took... It was Leghorn. Like Leghorn chicken. Ooh, standard chicken. Steve, Rabbi Weil. Are you here still?
Yeah.
He left, okay. I imagine he had Leghorns. In fact, I know he had Leghorns on his farm, because when Aaron and I were 18, we went to his farm. Unfortunately, he wasn't there, but I was searching desperately for a picture to show of his farm from many, many years ago. Does that mean that the Leghorn isn't kosher? Because it happens to be a little different and sits on a chevel like a dore sits on a chevel? Obviously.
No. We checked it. In fact, the Leghorn doesn't do it to itself. It's missing.
It was a mistake?
If it's uneven, unsteady, generally it does.
It does. Okay. So here we have different Dorsin. You can see here a buzzard with two in front and two in the back. Forget the American eagle. Look how it is. Three in front and one in the back. Okay. Ostrich. We always get this question. Is ostrich kosher? Of course, the ostrich is not kosher. But nonetheless, we got an ostrich. We went to a slaughterhouse where they were shechting ostriches. And here's an ostrich kurkav on the crop. Rabbi Ganach mentioned it has to be peelable. It's peelable. There's the ostrich farm. Just interesting, this fellow on the left is a veterinarian in Israel from Guy, and he's, I think, the number two bird man in the country, something like this. So he's a great resource for us anytime that we have questions, and you know, this is what Halacha L'Maisa is about, different types of... Again, it's not in any way, is it any sort of a proof, but here you can begin to see certain birds that appear on mosaic floors of shuls in Eretz Israel from the 3rd and 4th centuries, 5th centuries. Here we see some doves, dove of the kotel. Pigeon, special issue by shechting some of these small birds. The Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch said that you need a special masoret to shech some of these small birds, doves and pigeons. Why? Anyone who's a shofet knows that you have to hold the bird in a special way so that you can cut the windpipe and the esophagus. Or a bird, you don't need to cut the rope of one of them, but ideally you want to do both, certainly so the bird shouldn't suffer. And those simanim have a tendency to run around the neck, and there's a special, you have to learn how to do the tfisa. Here's a rav who was an expert, and he shechted a number of birds with us. Quail. We see it over here, number 8 on the Zidkei Cohen's hit list, in Latin, quaglia, or in Italian, quaglia. The OU now gives a hashkach on quail. I don't know if they would have done it before Rabbi Zwagenhoff. His letter appears in your book. Very special. Last page of the book. A very special, special rug. Now, here's a perfect example. He was at, I believe, the first or the second Masorah. The first Masorah conference we did in New York. I believe Rabbi Ganach knew him and brought him. And all... Well, we have a clip. You'll see a beautiful, beautiful old man who remembered shechting the birds. You're going to see the clip. It's very special. Passed away. Quail, a partridge, which in a minute we're going to see as well. Here we're talking about a quail. Quail's Latin name is Coturnix. Coturnix. Remember the story of the slough, where the slough came and the wind brought them in, and the slough landed, and the Jews in the wilderness couldn't hold back their taiva. He broke that taiva. And they had to attack these birds, literally almost, and ate them nonstop. And all of a sudden, they started dying. Just a fascinating thing. These birds fly from Europe across the Mediterranean. When they come to North Africa, they set up these nets forever. And the birds just fly into the nets, the birds are caught, and the birds are exhausted. It turns out that there's a disease called Coturnism. Poisons build up in the bird's bloodstream from this extended flight. And if you eat these birds right away, you could die. The Bedouin know this, and therefore the Bedouin take these birds, put them in kumim, in little cages, and leave them for 2, 3, 4 days until the bird's blood sort of clears itself out. Yeah, Ari brought to my attention some sort of an article, I think from 1979, as recently as that there was some sort of a ship or a tanker in the Mediterranean. The birds flew over, landed on the boat. Of course, what did the sailors do? They killed the birds and ate them. There were at least one, maybe 2 or 3 people that died on the boat, but it was like a ghost ship coming into the port of Naples. And we see a very interesting explanation as to possibly what happened. Fogla was a very, partridge was a very interesting masorah for us to catch. This is a fogla, a partridge, different species of partridge. You should know that for our dinner here, partridge is being served tonight. The first time in who knows how many years in America, maybe partridge was never available in America.
Never
available in America. I mean, maybe 150 years ago there were Jews who knew partridge from Europe. What page?
302 and 303.
On page 302 and 303, we collected a book from Rabbi Levinger. Maybe you'll see a bit of a flip in a minute, and you can see this was just done a few weeks ago in Europe. This man... the Rav in Israel. He was from Iran, correct? Iran. And he walked from Iran to Eretz Israel. And he walked through Turkey. And he told us, I knew this bird. He says it was called Kaplik in Turkish. Just now we went to Turkey, and I was asking the shoftim there, do you know a bird called the chogah? They didn't know what it was. I said, kaplik? Oh, kaplik, sure. You shaft it? No, we don't have that minhag here. Because all the shoftim come from Eretz Yisrael today. And he had that masorah. Do you see the partridge here? This is outside my house. That's it. And the bird lives in Eretz Yisrael. It runs across the fields. It's a very quick, very strong wild bird. And I must tell you, Ari doesn't believe me, but we were flying to Turkey now a week ago, and I saw one run across the runway in Ben-Gurion. But Ben-Israel...
How big are they? How much meat do you get out?
Very, very little meat.
Looks like it's not worth spending.
It's about this big. Okay, you're talking as an American today where, you know, if it doesn't have a good amount of meat, you know, in Europe, in World War I, we were told, where they didn't have food, the Jews of Germany would collect sparrows.
Yes, imagine what's on them. Yeah.
So you know, yeah, it doesn't have a lot of meat. It has a unique taste, though, which is also a reason why people would want to eat it. And here's a letter from Ben Isri. Rabbi Atias served as a shochet for many years. He's Moroccan, and here they're a dupe on this issue. Here we brought it. Rav Schechter was there also when we did this, and we're shechting the birds here with Rav Machpor, who also writes that there's a masorah on the bird. We're not going to go through the text right now, and here Rabbi. What I find interesting about this, and this is really the issue here, is that if we look at the map of the Mediterranean, and we look at Eretz Yisrael being the center. With the Galut, the Jews went everywhere. They went as far west as Morocco, as Tunisia, as Italy and Libya. Many, many of the Jews in Italy today come from Libya. They left Libya when things got tough there. There are Libyan synagogues in Rome today, and those minhagim go with them. Yemen, Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. Germany and England. It's hard for us today to wrap our heads around this. This Masorah traveled with the Jews where they went. And as we came back to Eretz Yisrael, or we moved to places where there was no Masorah anymore, or the birds didn't exist, it began to disappear. Guinea hens is a beautiful example. Guinea hens were eaten in England. They were eaten in North Africa. And these are Masorot that had literally disappeared. The OU doesn't yet accept our Masorot like Guinea hen, but we'll continue working on it. And here we have Rabbi Berstein, who talks about it. Gam yesh ofot ha-holchim v'batei chatzerot l'tiferet. There are these birds that walk around in these courtyards for beauty, for tiferet. Mitailim la'at, they walk slowly, v'nikraim guinea. And they're called guineas. And he talks about the Masorah. Oh, no, he doesn't have it. Omim aleim kiksherim hema. But here you see, he knew this bird. Rabahbu. He's from North Africa. He was from Morocco, and I brought him the chagav he's holding in his hand. Very interesting with him. He didn't want to be photographed until he went upstairs and got his chatzav to come downstairs. An older man. And I had a guinea. And just as I opened the box, the guinea went flying out of the box. It was on top of my car. And it sort of flew into like a little courtyard. This was in Harnot. And he had a cane. And it was such a funny scene. Here he was running to try and catch this bird. And he would corner it, and it would fly, and I'd try to catch it. And I cornered it, and finally what ended up happening was the guinea flew up on the tree. So, you know, if in years you see flocks of guineas in Harnot, you know where those guineas came from. The Muscovy duck. Now, this somebody asked before, didn't Ari ask Ari the question about Minhag Eretz Yisrael?
We'll talk about it tonight.
We'll talk about it tonight. Okay. So, Muscovy duck is a question. Rabbi Illoway, who was in Louisiana, one of the big building here, talks about this. I never saw this thing, and I asked the person, how do you have such a bird? And he said, we had a Masorah, there were people here, they used to shech them, all right? I don't know where he got the Masorah from. And he says, Hare me Shame Olam Lo haya v'chat meki lo ve'ela. This thing never, there was never Rav Musmach. Okay? There was never a Rav Musmach po in any of these kehilot in America. We're talking, he wrote this around the year 1900. When was it, Eric? 1862. And look at the footnote. It's such a beautiful footnote. Ve'ad hayom hazeh ein b'kol medinat America asher yesh yoter mishnei meot kehilot gedolot v'ktanot yoter me'arba rabbanim musmachim. ומהם שלושה מתמידים של בילם בן בואור שנאמר שלחת לבני כי רב הוא. בקיצר, and who was this shofet, who was this chazan that had the mesoret, ועודות החזן אשר לפניו וקילתו ואכל גם כן מן זה, גם כן אין הוראה, you can't rely upon this man, כי איש זה Terem Naser Chazan Haya Kotei B'Star Yom Berchot Sham. He used to write in the courts. He was a stenographer. V'Haya Kotei Gam B'Shabbat. V'Achakach Naser Socher became a businessman. V'Haya Nopein Hachanuto Patuach Im Basar Hazir V'Nevelot B'Trefot B'Shabbatot. The kids are to make a long story short. He did not accept this bird, and this bird is not shechted in America, and the OU will not give a hashgach on the bird. Nonetheless, in Eretz Yisrael, the bird was brought to Eretz Yisrael, and the Rabbanut does give a hechsher. And here we have, then it was Fangwa, but no longer acceptable to be done in Eretz Yisrael.
What's the difference between that duck and a kind of duck that you go buy from Empire?
It's a different species. It has a bump on its nose. It comes from South America.
But here, we don't have any United States.
Of course it's raised in America, but it's not raised kosher.
Are you going to be there tonight?
No, I couldn't afford it.
And here we see some of the ducks that are sold in Israel, Muscovy sold and so on. Passer, sparrow, here it is in the Kotel. We have a Masoret on sparrow, here's a sparrow. As one of the Rabbanim, Yemenite said to me, how do you know if it's a male bird or a female bird? This just shows halacha l'maisa. You have to see it to know. He says if it has a black bib on its neck, you know it's a male bird. How would anybody know that if you didn't have a handle and understand the reality? Well, Wirtz catching some sparrows, and finally the peacock. Is the peacock kosher? Well, forget seeing it on shuls. The Zibchei Kohen has a picture of it in the book, and you really can't miss it. Okay, there is no other bird that looks like the peacock. The tavas mentioned in the Gemara was eaten, was kosher. Of course, it's the same question. Is the tavas that we call today in Hebrew, tavas, the same tavas of the Gemara? We shechted this bird not to eat. We shechted it for the research. Was it baltashkit? I don't think so, because we stuffed it and we use it for educational purposes. And indeed, we checked the simanim. There's the prop and the korkavan niklap. Here you see on the right-hand side, you can see the peacock of the zibchei kohen. And let's just run through these. Is it kosher? You have to ask your rabbi. here we have, as recently as I think it was 1982, 2000, the London Baiting. Pigeon, pheasant, partridge are also kosher, while Germanic tradition also allows spout. Just, I would like to conclude by thanking everybody for your attention. Just so you should understand, it will make it very clear. The purpose of what we do isn't about the eating of the meat. You know, people think tonight is going to be this orgy of food. That's not what it's about. It's simply about preserving our Masoret and passing our Masoret on. Have a nice day. Thank you.